ba bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba bam ba bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba 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 bu ba bu ba ba.
All right, here it is. It's the bonus hour, everybody. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the magic of the bonus hour with us, Bill and Wendy. Tomorrow at this time, Wendy, you will have milked a cow. A childhood dream of yours will become a reality as we go to the county fair.
Now I'm getting grossed out.
You can't. It's too late. The arrangements have been made. The cow signed the forms. You've signed the forms. A pact has been made. A milk pact.
There's no other way.
Please don't say that in front of the cow. Please. Well, you can say it in front of me. I'm, you know, it's hard to offend me, but not in front of the cow.
You know, I know it's, what is it called? ASMR or something is that it,
ASMR?
Jasmine?
Yeah, that's it.
When you hear a sound that, like, relaxes you or something. I don't know if it's from my days of watching Green Acres or what, but the sound that milk makes when it's squirting into a metal bucket is cool. I like that sound. My main ASMR.
So if you had a white noise machine with countless settings, you could put whatever you wanted on the white noise machine, you would choose milk squirting into a bucket?
I don't know if that would be my top 10.
That soothes you? Puts you to sleep?
It's autonomous sensory meridian response, and it's an experience characterized by a static-like or tingling sensation on the skin.
Oh.
It's just like a feel-good sound for you. Now, that's not what my top one, but I do like that.
Interesting.
My
and
big
when
one,
you hear it, you say to yourself, I want in on that. I want to not just hear that sound. I want to create that sound.
Well, yeah, but my main one is dress shoes, like a hard-heeled shoe walking across gravel. I love that sound.
How did that start? When did you hear that you just went, oh, yeah, now that's a sound?
In movies. It's something about, like,
old
when,
movies?
Could
be any time?
Yeah, any movie that I see that, or a car pulling up on gravel that goes very slowly where you can just hear that.
Yeah.
Sometimes even a horse that is walking slowly, not galloping.
But a slow, just a
like
horse.
A slow walking on
taking
the gravel.
Taking in the sights?
Yeah, strolling.
Yeah.
Pleasure horse.
A pleasure horse.
Which someone has texted us. We had talked about this, about going to the McHenry County Fair in Woodstock. We'll be there tomorrow from 10 to 1. At this time tomorrow, we'll be there. And it said on their website, like, horse pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know what that meant, but someone, a lot of people are answering our farm questions.
Mm-hmm.
And horse pleasure means showing horses in the pleasure category. They show the gaits of walk, the trot, and the canter.
Are those pleasurable to the horse or to those viewing the horse? Or to everybody? Maybe
I think
everybody.
The person riding the horse.
Oh, yeah. I bet it's pleasurable to them, sure.
Because, you know...
But would the horse agree? Would the horse go, yeah, this is nice?
I only have Mr. Ed to ask, and he won't be there tomorrow.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ed.
Hello.
That's all you say?
Yeah. That's as deep as I got.
But they should call it something differently. Like,
yeah, because that infers something naughty is going on.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
And, you know, horses.
Hello.
Mr. Ed, your junk looks like.
Don't.
Human. So, yeah.
Wow.
I worked at Brookfield Zoo.
Who have you dated in the past? Wow.
No, I mean.
Hello. I wonder if there will be a Mr. Ed sound-alike contest, because I may enter.
This is probably the last edition of the bonus hour, everyone.
All right. Well, all I'm saying is
goodbye.
Ta-ta. That's what you should
ta-ta.
Say.
Ta-ta. Mr. Ed wouldn't say ta-ta.
I would love it if he
did. Auf Wiedersehen. That's the German Mr. Ed.
Giddy up. That's what he'd say.
Yeah.
I worked at Brookfield Zoo, and many years ago they had the children's zoo. They've built that up now, and it's not called that.
Uh-huh.
But there were horses, and sometimes the horses would just be out having their water or eating their hay, and their unit would be exposed.
Mm.
And it was...
And is that when you took up charcoal sketching?
No.
I've got to get myself a picture of this and put this in my dining room.
No, but like if you see, you know, sometimes you see animals, ding dongs.
Sometimes.
Well, I mean, you know, if a dog's walking by, you can see
That's
it hanging
why all
there.
Animals should wear underpants, in my opinion. Every animal should put on a pair of underpants.
Winnie the Pooh.
Right, especially Winnie the Pooh. Especially.
But, you know, there are different appendages.
They put a shirt on Winnie the Pooh, but they didn't put pants on
them. They were poor. They couldn't afford both.
If you're Winnie the Pooh, don't you say to your parents, just give me a pair of pants. I don't need the shirt. Of the two options,
shirt.
Yeah,
you go with the pants.
Silly. Put a pair of pants on me. Did Donald Duck say that was okay? He wore a sailor top and no pants, too.
Why did they not wear pants?
I don't know.
I'm really bothered by the Bears commercial with the toilet paper because Bears don't use toilet paper.
Oh, the Heine clean one?
I don't know. It's Pamper.
Where the little bear is yelling, hey,
oh,
my
yeah.
Heine's clean.
I didn't hear
it's
the Heine.
Charmin clean.
They don't use toilet paper.
Bears
don't.
Do not use toilet paper.
I know that bears do something in the woods. Is that why bears are doing that? Are they endorsing it because of that reason?
That's a great question.
Because typically, any bear I've seen,
right.
They don't use toilet paper.
Chris Orich did.
He used leaves.
Right. Right. Right.
All right.
Hello.
Goodbye, Mr. Ed. Whatever. Just check it out next time you see a horse.
So tomorrow, as they bring the cow toward you to be milked, will you be excited?
Yeah,
how will you feel about this?
Those things are
kind of... Just for anybody listening, please
It was
know,
my idea.
You wanted to do this.
Yeah,
they didn't say to us, hey, one of you has to milk a cow. You said, will there be a cow there that I can milk? I've always wanted to milk a cow, and they made it happen.
Yeah, I can't wait to do it, but I'm just... It's gross. You know, those things have been used a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I should wear gloves. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it, but
probably
it's...
take the horse out, or the horse, the cow out to lunch.
What's on your mind?
Wow. That would be weird.
All right. Well, for some reason, the bonus hour was not recorded yesterday, and I kind of wish this one wasn't, but it is. I don't know what's going on. I do know that... I don't see many movies, so when I really like something,
you shout it from the rooftops.
I kind of do.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
But now, really, Quentin Tarantino's new movie, I know the hype was pretty huge, and I know it did pretty well at the box office opening
weekend.
His movies
are always highly anticipated. As soon as he announces he's working on a movie or any cast members, people get very, very excited. He has a very, very loyal fan base, and rightfully so. The majority of his movies have been really very good. He's one of those directors that more times than not you can count on to provide you with a solid movie. So I'd say 3 years ago, 2.5 or 3 years ago, he started talking about this movie, and then the cast was assembled.
What a cast it is.
Yeah.
There are a lot of celebrities in it that I was unaware of in small doses.
Mm-hmm.
Robin from Stranger Things, who is the offspring of Uma Thurman.
And Ethan
Hawke.
Yeah.
She's in it for a second.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith's daughter, Harley Quinn Smith, is in it.
Oh, all right.
One of the lead roles of a young woman, I didn't know who that was, and I looked it up, and Andy McDowell is her mother.
Oh, yeah.
And she's great.
I know who that is. I don't know her name. She's a model. I know that.
Well, she's goofy.
Yeah.
She's very good in this.
Oh, good.
You have your Leonardo DiCaprio, who is awesome.
Yeah.
He's always been a great actor.
He's worked with Quentin Tarantino before.
See, to me, that doesn't seem like they would have been together. They don't seem like they'd pal around. Brad Pitt.
You've never seen, I think we talked about this yesterday, the day before, the movie Django Unchained.
No, I got to see that. And Inglourious Basterds, I haven't seen.
So Brad Pitt was in that, Inglourious Basterds.
God, I love Brad
Leonardo
Pitt.
Leonardo DiCaprio played a character named Candy, a plantation owner in Django Unchained, a very bad man. Very bad man. So they had some history together, you know? And a lot of directors will find an actor or two that they really gel with. And use them over and over again. So,
like Michael Madsen's in it for a split second, but you knew that was coming. Your buddy.
He's, yeah, we're very close. I always have to up my life insurance if I know he's coming anywhere near me. Michael Madsen.
I met him once at, it was a press junket in New York City for, I think, season two of The Sopranos. And Buzz Kilman and I went, we took a flight there. We landed. We went to this hotel that this party was at. And I talked to Lorraine Bracco, who was awesome.
Yeah.
And Michael Madsen was pretty cool, actually.
Was he smoking?
Yes.
Yep.
And then Buzz took me to the Carnegie Deli because he said, you got to go.
You should
go
there.
And it's good because they closed. Yeah. And then we hopped on a red eye to come home. So that was my only experience in New York.
Yeah.
So I would like to go and spend more time.
Yeah.
But Michael Madsen, even Buzz was kind of like apprehensive like of talking to him.
He's volatile.
Yeah. He's.
You never know if the world is going to end soon when he's nearby. I say that with love and respect, but he's dangerous. He's extremely dangerous.
I'm sure he's fine to the people that he loves.
I don't know that that's true.
And who's his sister?
Virginia Madsen.
Yeah.
She's far less dangerous.
Where's she been lately? Is
she still shows up and stuff.
Well, it's just once upon a time in Hollywood, it's a fairy tale, let's put it that way, as seen in Quentin Tarantino's eyes.
But here's my question. Bruce Lee is depicted in the movie. I've not seen it, so I don't know exactly how he's depicted, but you have seen it. So don't give away too much.
No, I won't.
But why is Bruce Lee's daughter so upset about the way her father is portrayed in the movie?
This actor, I believe his name is Mike Mo, M-O-H, does a great job. You can tell right away it's Bruce Lee. He does a great job being Bruce Lee. There's a certain way in which Bruce Lee is acting in this film that his daughter Shannon Lee says, my dad wasn't like that.
Oh.
But it needed to have Bruce Lee act that way to further the storyline of something.
Oh.
So, Bruce Lee's daughter said it was disheartening to see Quentin Tarantino depict her father as an arrogant guy, because she's just saying he wasn't like that.
Yeah. This is tough to judge because I haven't seen it, but I can understand her point of view, because you say, you know, there's a whole generation of people who don't really know my dad. They might have heard the name. They know how legendary he is. But when they see him in a movie, they would believe it. So I understand that end of it. But I also understand the end where you go, I'm just making a movie. This isn't real.
Right.
It's just my version of reality.
Right.
It doesn't mean that any of this is real.
And I don't, there are some things that if I said would be spoilers. I will say that Jimmy Mack is a big Bruce Lee fan.
Yeah.
And has a friend of ours wrote a book about Bruce Lee. Jim knows a lot about Bruce Lee, and the first thing he said when we walked out of that movie is, that's not how Bruce Lee was. And I said, well, whatever.
Yeah,
it's just a
movie version of it all. In the movie, it's the Bruce Lee from The Green Hornet, mm-hmm. right, when he's Kato?
Mm-hmm.
That makes you want to see it even more.
Bottom line, she just says it was since he was an Asian American in the 60s in Hollywood, he had to work much harder to succeed.
I'm sure of it.
Than white guys.
Yeah.
So she said her dad didn't act like that, but it's okay. It's a great part of the movie.
Do you know the story about when he, Bruce Lee, was on an episode of Batman?
Sort of.
There was a crossover. The guys who produced the TV series Batman decided they wanted to also do a TV series, The Green Hornet, which was only on for a year. And I love The Green Hornet. I liked it more as a kid. Like, as an adult, it's very hard to sit through the episode. They're okay, but they're not great, you know? But as a kid, it was a cool show. Anyway, they did a crossover episode to introduce the Green Hornet and Kato to Batman fans so that they would then start watching the Green Hornet. So in the show, it's not established. Batman and Robin don't understand that the Green Hornet and Kato are good guys. They think they're bad guys. So there's a fight between Batman and Robin and the Green Hornet and Kato. So Bruce Lee is a world-class martial arts master. Burt Ward was not.
Really?
So, yeah. So Bruce Lee wasn't exactly taking it easy on Burt Ward, and Burt Ward was scared out of his mind, because up until that point, he was Robin and he could do no wrong and everybody loved him.
Yeah.
And when they said to the actors, Robin is going to punch you and it'll say pow, and then you'll take a punch at him and it'll say whap, you know, everybody played along. But with Bruce Lee, he was making it very, very difficult for Burt Ward to do his job because he was a tough guy.
Well,
he was holding back.
Then maybe this is more accurate than we said. You know, we all seem to defend our family members.
Right.
And I don't know how old Shannon was when Bruce died. I don't know.
She would have had to have been very, very young. Because I think she's only in her late 30s or early 40s, and that's about the time he died. So she must have been a baby or just a couple of years old.
Yeah, and she's also bothered because the Green Hornet ran from 1967 to 68.
Yeah, it was a very short run.
And her father's, the way they made Bruce Lee look in this particular movie was more of his look from the 70s Enter the Dragon.
Oh, game. That's interesting because I've seen a picture of the actor who plays mm-hmm. him, and that's true.
But she did say that Mike Mo did a good job with some of her father's mannerisms and voice. Honestly,
it's convincing.
Yes.
I bet that makes it for her, for Bruce Lee's daughter, I bet that makes it worse because she sees how convincing a job yeah. he does. And he goes, and she says, now everyone's really going to believe my dad was a jerk.
You know what? I don't think anybody really. It's not the main part of the movie. So I don't
right.
think anybody walked out of there.
Right.
I just thought, God, that guy was a great Bruce Lee.
Yeah,
that's all I
that's
thought.
It. There's a place here in town that makes high-end ping pong tables, like really expensive ping pong tables. They're great, but they're very expensive. And I went there several years ago to just see what they had. And at this place, it's a showroom, and they've got like, I don't know, 15 or 20 different tables. The cheapest one is a well-made, expensive one, but then it goes up from there. And then in the showroom, there's this one ping pong table that's the third of the size of a regular ping pong table. You know how a regular ping pong
yeah.
table is about the size of a pool table?
Yeah.
Exactly the same size. So this table is a third of the size. So they kept referring to that. They go, you got to play on the Bruce Lee table. And I go, why do you guys call it the Bruce Lee table? So they told me that when he was alive, he commissioned them. Now, keep in mind, this is almost 50 years ago. It's like 40-something years ago. He had them make this table that's a third of the size so that he could work on his timing, because he wanted to, he would play a guy that was a ping pong player, but he wanted his reflexes to be sharpened. So he learned to play on this table that was a third of the size. And when you play on a table that size, you have to be razor fast.
Yes.
And the ball's going to get past you. And they said he became a master on this size table.
So did you buy the little table? The
Bruce Lee
table?
It. I so wanted it.
Because it will make you better.
But I understood it immediately. Like, you just go, oh, yeah, I guess you have to have fast reflexes to play the game anyway. But when it's all a third of the size, you have to, everything has to be split second. There's no
yeah.
time to think. You just have to react. And that's how fast he was.
That's how fast you are. I just remember the first time I watched you play ping pong for reals, because you didn't play it correctly when you played against Judy Pilot.
I gave in a lot to Judy.
A lot. You hardly played.
I didn't want her to be sad.
But I saw him. Kim Gordon joins us now.
Hi, Kim.
I'm here.
You
didn't want Judy to be sad. You didn't want to hear it from Judy.
Yeah,
I didn't want
sad. You didn't want
right.
to get your ass kicked. Exactly.
That's basically it. That's it exactly.
We went to Turks and Caicos together when we worked at Q101.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Cook from the Sam Adams Company brought a bunch of radio stations there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. That water really was turquoise.
The bluest water you'd ever imagine.
And I saw you play ping pong because there was a ping pong table.
By the pool.
Yeah. And all I could think of was the sound effects of Ricochet Rabbit.
Oh, thank you.
It was so, I mean, like, you know, I've played ping pong my whole life. You
A little volley.
Yes. Yeah. You know, usually you're at a party and you're drinking a beer in one hand.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how fast you were.
Thanks.
I didn't know that's how people played ping pong.
Yeah, it's a fast game.
So you need to get the Bruce Lee table and get even faster.
All right. I will put a bid on the Bruce Lee table. All right, here's what we'll do.
That was What's Hot, What's Cold, brought to you by American Weathermakers, the 60-Minute Men. And I still am sticking with my review of Once Upon a Time
four stars?
In Hollywood.
Four out of four?
I
Yeah?
I like,
it seems apprehensive. Don't be...
Well, because I'm... You know what? I'm easy. I will tell everybody... I'm not the participation mom where everybody deserves a trophy.
Yeah.
I loved this movie. Yeah, yeah. I'd give it 4 stars.
And you would see it again. You'd sit through it a second time.
I may actually go.
Wow.
Because I feel like I missed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot going on.
Brian Altimer, Rogue Cons producer, he's seen it twice already.
So he
already
loved it.
He loved it.
In a week.
Okay, Brian and I at this point are the only ones that
have
loved it. Oh, yeah, because it's Quentin Tarantino.
That's why I was asking.
I don't think he's made a movie that's not had a bit of violence
this
in it.
This is hideous violence, but not throughout the whole movie.
Right. It's always in the last third.
This was one of the worst violence.
You've seen... All right, so the first time I became aware of him... I know we have to break for news, but the first time I ever heard of Quentin Tarantino wasn't for a movie he directed, but it was for a movie he wrote called Modern Romance.
Yes, that is one of my favorite movies also.
That's a masterpiece. It's
that
so good.
Is Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
Christian Slater.
Yeah. Val Kilmer.
You know who else is in there?
James Gandolfini.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is...
he's a hitman.
With a heart of gold.
With a heart of gold. Those are the best kind of hitmen.
So that was his movie?
He wrote it. He didn't direct it.
True Romance, if you haven't seen it. And that there are some really violent parts of that.
Yeah.
But all in all, that movie is tremendous.
Yeah. Brad Pitt's in that.
Oh, he's a stoner on the couch,
isn't
he?
Yeah, he's got a very small part in that, but he's in that.
Dude.
Yeah, he's great in that.
That was not a big stretch for a role,
maybe
quite
not.
Honestly. But yeah, he was really good. I recommend that. Yeah, I'd give it 4 out of 4
yeah,
stars.
That's
and I'm
going
to go see it with Brian Altimer.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And we'll,
that's the way to see it.
It'll be his third, my second.
All right, a break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, Nick DiGilio, according to a texter, loved the new Quentin Tarantino movie also. Nick and I have been like on the total same page for things.
Oh, interesting.
We both watched Big Brother.
Yeah.
Which I can't watch on Channel 2. How long is that going to go on?
It's been nearly 2 weeks already, which
July
is too long.
July 20th, I think, is when it went.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable.
I don't like it.
And according to 414, Richard Romper liked it very much as well.
Was Romper a fan of it? All right. I was wondering if he was a fan or not.
They mean Roper, but that's okay.
Autocorrect.
This was the inventor of the Romper Room. Is that the same Richard Romper we're talking about?
Yes.
All right, so I guess he's giving it good reviews, I'm in.
Back to you.
Can I tell you something strange? I noticed this, well, I've noticed this throughout my life, but I really noticed it last night, and I'm watching it on a monitor behind me. It's funny how during the debates, and I'm doing it right now, I'm guilty of it as well,
people
that even though you're talking and you talk with your voice, your hands are frequently moving. I was watching this during the debate yesterday, how different their movements are. Some of the debaters yesterday, they point a lot at whoever they're condemning, you know, is ever they're talking about. They keep pointing at them. Others are using their hands to, you know, back and forth to just kind of show some sort of motion.
I feel like somebody trains them to use their hands in certain
ways.
Oh,
do you think so?
Yes, I do. Because
to be more physical?
Yes. It's the same when, you know, people are at a political rally, you know, they're always waving or they point at somebody.
Yes.
I feel like they are trained to do that for some reason.
Yeah.
To make them look, I don't know, warmer, human. I don't know.
But it's
but
funny
I think there's got to be some reason behind it.
That it maybe it's showing you more animated. I mean, I don't need to
well,
be moving
somebody,
my hands while
it
we're
doesn't
talking.
Make for good TV if somebody's standing there like a robot, just straight,
right.
You know? So.
Right. Right.
I noticed something about Beto O'Rourke when he was speaking. He has the same cadence as Barack Obama.
It's very similar.
Do you think that's on purpose?
I don't know,
could
but
be.
I feel like, and then you got Pete Buttigieg, who just is like just talking.
Yeah,
he just seems so genuine,
he
so
seems
real,
the most natural.
Relaxed. Yeah,
yeah.
And then I can tell the passion behind each and every one of these individuals.
Seems genuine. Nobody seems overly fake to me.
No, and I mean, even that Marianne Williamson, and I shouldn't say that Marianne Williamson.
Sounds like something Phoebe Wallingford would have said on All My Children whenever one of her nieces was dating somebody.
But she sounds like something Phoebe Buffay would say at, you know, she's just very interesting.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
Zen.
Yes.
We need love. Yeah, we do, but we need some other things.
Yeah.
Why the woman who is the author?
That's Marianne Williamson.
Marianne Williamson. Why does she not want to talk about her friendship with Oprah Winfrey? Do you know that? Did something weird happen?
No. Maybe Oprah's going to be her VP candidate.
That's possible, I guess.
Where was it brought up that she won't talk about?
She was on yesterday on some show on CNN in the daytime. She was on for a long time. Like, usually when they have somebody on like that, they're on for a segment, maybe two. But she was on for the better part of an hour yesterday. Really? A long, long time. And one of the questions that the woman asked, who was the host of the show, I don't know her name, I'm sorry, but she said, let's talk about your relationship with Oprah Winfrey, because in the past it's been made apparent that she was Oprah's, I believe, spiritual advisor. So that's what she was leading in with. And she said, no, I'd really prefer not to talk about that.
Brooke Baldwin, is that
Brooke Baldwin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Democratic presidential candidate Marianne Williamson on Wednesday denied that Oprah Winfrey is advising her on her presidential run. So she wasn't saying they weren't friends, but she wants
it. She didn't really want to talk about their friendship or relationship, though. She made it pretty clear.
They have a friendship and a professional history together. Williamson told CNN's Brooke Baldwin that Winfrey is, quote, absolutely not advising her presidential campaign, and added that she doesn't think of herself as Winfrey's spiritual advisor. I can't share with her what my relationship with her is about, Williamson said, and I don't think of myself as her spiritual advisor. I can see where she'd try and separate the two.
Well, also, you know, if you're Oprah, sometimes when you deal with people, you have people sign a contract where you say that you're not going to discuss what goes on.
No, maybe.
So maybe she can't.
Yeah.
And, I mean, wouldn't you, like, I don't know, I just feel like that negates her run for presidency. Like, you
because
know, oh, because she's
go,
Oprah's
oh,
friend.
It's Oprah's friend.
Of course she's running. Oprah got her in. I think she would want to distance
also,
herself.
Also, what
from
if
that.
She said.
And Gail could be jealous.
There could be a little bit of King jealousy. What if she said or implied that Oprah was in her corner, and then Oprah then comes out and goes, no, I'm supporting. That's not. I'm all not right. throwing my support for her. I'm giving this guy or this girl my support. Then everything blows up in her face, right? Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's going to make it to the end, so I don't think we
I
have to worry.
I don't think she's going to make it to the next debate, no offense.
Yeah, Paul Lisnick was on with us earlier, Kim, and he seemed to believe that it would be down to about 10 candidates, give or take a couple.
Did he say what the criteria was for the cutoff?
He did. It's a combination of having donors.
That's what I thought.
A certain amount of donors, and then the other part is how you're polling. It's a combination of those two things. So there's no fixed number on what the next level will be. It's at 20 right now, but he seemed to think it would be, did he say between 8 and 10, he would imagine?
So then we can at least go down to one debate.
yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to.
Yeah, to watch 2 days back to back.
Yeah.
Although
I liked it.
I give you credit.
I'm a new person, as you well know.
I think you are a new person. Old Wendy would not have watched 2 days full of debates, 2 hours each, right?
Three.
Was it three?
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept switching back and forth between, as a fiscal America, as an American who cares about the future, between the Cubs game, the White Sox game, and the debates.
Yeah, the White Sox game
back
was coming
forth,
on. Jim
forth.
Was switching it every time I'd leave the room, and then I'd come back and put it back on.
Yeah, it was
on.
The White Sox and the Mets.
But seriously, Michael is 20, my son, and he was at work, and he asked if I'd wait for him to watch the debate.
That's great.
It is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't believe stuff I hear come out of their mouths. You know, they love Bernie Sanders. I get that. And
would it have made you laugh if, well, Bernie Sanders was debating, there was a bowl of soup on his on his lectern? Any soup, but that would be the best one. But if they were asking him a question and they cut to him and he's just finishing off a spoonful of soup.
That would have been funny.
That would have been great.
I know the younger generation likes him because of his free college, and I just, there is no way that can happen, nor should it, in my opinion. There needs to be a way for the government to gain a control over the tuition that colleges and universities charge. You can't give people free college. One of the candidates, and I can't remember who, wants to see, it might be Beto, he wants to see an associate's degree, like 2-year college, be free.
Yeah. And then you pay for the next two?
Yeah. But
that's interesting.
You can, and rich people would also, like their kids, like Lori Loughlin would never have had to bribe anybody to get in because if this free college thing happened, her kids would get in free just like your kids. And that, to me, seems wrong.
If you look at why so many of us are in debt, one of the reasons so many of us are in debt is what we're paying for college. It's so outrageously priced.
And even you saying that and relieving all this student debt, what about the people who had to take on three and four jobs to pay off that student debt? Right. Are they going to get a refund for what they've already paid?
No.
That doesn't seem fair. What about what you've already paid?
Yeah.
That's not fair. And the colleges, again, you can't just go, hey, every college is free, but can't the government strong arm colleges and universities to get the tuition and room and board down to what it probably should be?
I would love that.
But that makes more sense to me.
While you were gone, the great prophet David Hochberg was here, and believe it or not, he got very upset about this. You wouldn't think something would upset him to this degree, but it did. He was talking about the endowment, the money that has been bankrolled at certain schools that's just kind of sitting in a hopper at your various schools.
Or whatever.
And it's in the billions. Like, there's colleges that have billions of dollars in reserve. They have amassed billions of dollars. That's just sitting there.
Is it actual scholarship money or is it for capital improvements?
It's just, well...
Well, if it's endowments, then they can give it away as they see fit. And it's usually an endowment is to cover your tuition.
Certain endowments, though, are specific for specific, you know, you can have an open endowment and then there's some that are just specific for certain things for, like, and you can't touch that money.
Well, his point was, I'm not going to name any specific school. Actually, he did allude to one of the schools.
All right.
There was one. All right. I won't. So let's just make
a
school, Millard Fillmore College. I don't know if that exists or not. But Millard Fillmore College is saying, hey, if you're a new student here at Millard Fillmore College, it's going to cost you on average $40,000 a year to come here. When they're sitting in their vault, they've got billions of dollars sitting in their vault. They're not hurting for money. They've got nothing but money. But every student that comes in, it's going to cost $40,000 a year. And he's talking about how insane that is. And I agree with him. It is. I mean, you're going through it now. I've been going through it where...
Junior college, which is nothing. And I'm telling you to any parent listening, if
it's
your kid
option.
It really is. Even with if your kid knows what they want to be, it's gen ed classes. I know it's very important to get away and learn how to stand on your own two feet, and living in a dorm is a great introduction to learning how to take care of yourself.
Right.
But the way colleges are now, I make decent money. Yeah. I couldn't afford that.
I know. And what about, like, you've got two kids. I've got two kids. Kim, you have
I have three kids.
Don't you know people who have five kids or six kids?
Yeah,
and you go, how in the world are you affording this?
And I have three kids who've also been to grad school. Three kids in grad school,
yeah.
Too.
Makes it even more fun, doesn't it? So my daughters have friends who have already graduated that are working at jobs that are just slightly above minimum wage jobs, and that's after paying $120,000 for 4 years of college, or $130,000 for college, and they're working jobs that are just above minimum pay. That's horrible.
And I mean, just the cost of living is not equal to how much college has gone up.
Right.
I mean, I can't remember. I went to Illinois State until Christmas when I went away to school. And then I just wasn't ready to get away from home.
Yeah.
And my mom was a single mom. I did get financial aid to go there. I don't know how much she was out, but I was miserable and had to come home. And then I went to Triton College, got my general eds out of the way, have an associate's degree, and landed a job in radio. And I know, like, going to college is a great thing. And it's, even if you want to be in radio or a musician, it's nice to have a backup plan. But
it's a nice thing, but is it $140,000 or $160,000 good thing?
No, because you know what? Your backup plan could be, you know what? I'm going to go into the trades and get trained to become a carpenter.
Yeah, right.
Because there's a shortage of those people, and they make pretty good money.
Yeah, right.
It's, you know, a backup plan you can figure out as you go along. And I was having this conversation with my son, Michael, who's 20, and I'm like, God, you're just so young. There are people that change careers in their 40s, 50s, sometimes even 60s.
Yeah.
My son had a woman in his law school class who was in her 60s who'd been a banker for her whole life, and she wanted to go to law
gears.
School. Yeah.
And people always go, oh my God, you're going to be 68 when you get out. Well, you're going to be 68 anyway.
Right.
So
obviously you want the education. It's something, you know, you use every day. You can use every day, though, if you're not practicing law.
So has any candidate, like the candidates talked a little bit last night about the idea of free college or a version of free college, but has anyone said we need to essentially put some sort of a ceiling or a controlled price on colleges so that people aren't in debt for the rest of their lives just for putting two or three kids through college?
I didn't see last night, but I know Bernie Sanders wants to do that, but I don't know.
All right, so someone has just texted, you're misinformed. Young people don't like Bernie Sanders just because of free college. They like him because he speaks the truth and seems to really care about what he's talking about. Elizabeth Warren is the same way, but Sanders was first to get recognized for it.
I think there's something to that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you hear free college,
it sparks you. Although, I don't know if most kids think about this, but like we pay, my wife and I are paying for my daughter's college.
Right.
Don't most parents pay for their kids' college?
If
most
they
of
can.
Them? Yeah.
I mean, if they can, there's a lot of people who haven't.
Yeah. And they take out, there was a guy we worked with at WLS. He ran the board overnight for a while. And he graduated from college. I'm not going to give too many details because I don't want to say who it is. And he paid for his whole college. And I said, how much is your, we were talking about his student loan payments. And he's like, they're $3,500 a month. And I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
How will you ever live out on your own?
But this reminds me of, there used to be a comic that used to do this joke about how when you're passing by a hotel, and on the attraction board at the hotel, it says, kids eat for free. Because the joke was, kids always eat for free. When do you see a kid go, I got this. I'll pay for this. I got this.
Got this.
That's
Richie
how
Rich.
College is for a lot of people, you know?
And another interesting text, if college was free, it would not be worth much. It would be worth as much as a high school diploma. There's something to be said for that, too.
I guess.
Well, it doesn't have to be free. It just has to be affordable.
But that's where I feel, you know, this free college is kind of a crazy idea. But can't the government come up with some plan to strong arm these universities and colleges
to make it more affordable?
I mean, our kids go to public school. They get a good education.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and I guess it goes to the same discussion of like, you know, Medicare for all, you know, is insurance a right or is it
it should be.
I mean, I don't disagree, but I'm saying some people. Is education the same thing? I kind of think it is.
But what does an employer see when all right, so let's say there's a job and there's five candidates for the job. I know I'm just picking numbers at random. Just by looking at people's resumes and knowing where they went to college and where they graduated from, does that really make the decision of which of those five people he or she
is going
to hire?
Depends what job it is. And I think they definitely look for a college degree.
They look for a college degree, but are some more impressive, you know, the names of the
Harvard,
big schools?
Yale.
Yeah, Stanford. Let's say somebody graduated from Stanford, and then the other person went to College of DuPage, but seems much better qualified. Is the Stanford guy or girl going to get the job over the College of DuPage just because of that?
Well, College of DuPage would only be an associate's. The other one would be a bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
And if somebody has a master's degree, that would mean even more. Although, I don't know, I could never run a business because I would never trust anybody with my stuff.
Oh.
That was just the bottom line. Like, even at home, like, I'll just do it myself because I'll do it better. You'll screw it up.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, it's perfect if you could find someone who's super qualified and is really smart.
Right.
But isn't experience more important to you than they got straight A's at Harvard? Like, don't you, depending on what you do.
Not just experience, but just
performance.
I mean, there's more to a person than just
great grades.
Great grades and just, you know, brains. You have to have common sense. You have to be social. You have to talk with people. There was interesting, I recently heard Malcolm Gladwell speak, and he has a podcast about this, if anybody's interested, about he looked at people who went to law schools and their rankings and where they went to school and how they, you know, who hired them after the fact and all these different things about people taking the LSAT.
Mm-hmm.
And what he found was the Harvard grads and the, you know, Yale grads, weren't the successful lawyers as the, like, for example, a University of Illinois law school grad.
Really?
Or, yeah.
Why was there a reason for that?
He broke it all down. He had charts and the whole thing. And it was really, really interesting. But just because you go to one of these schools doesn't mean you're going to be the most successful.
The school doesn't matter. It's what you get out of it.
Exactly.
And from anywhere and in any way that you do it.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people that don't have that way of thinking. It's like, you know, I was never asked, do I want to go to school? It was like, where are you going to college?
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, I don't know. My sister went to U of I. My brother went to ISU. I guess I can't get into U of I, so I guess I'm going to ISU.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Columbia College existed. That would have been perfect for me.
Probably.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was here. Now the pressure they put on kids, you know, I guess is good in a way. They open their eyes to see that there are schools all over the place, but, you know, that's not always the right path for someone.
I mean, and I think a lot of it, in some ways, is fate. I mean, I have a marketing degree.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so where your path takes you down the road and the way things happen.
Right.
You don't necessarily.
It's unpredictable.
It is
unpredictable.
You know, you just.
Has anyone. Where did you graduate from, Kim?
University of Louisville.
Has anyone ever asked that in any job you've had? Like, where'd you graduate from? What was your ranking in school? It's never come up, right?
And I think once you have your first job, people don't care.
Yeah,
I think it's all about
right.
the first job.
You're right.
Because then they just want to know your experience.
Yeah, that's so true.
Can I say something here?
Yes, college graduate.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to school?
When I first got hired for my first job in broadcasting, it really depended on me going to a local school because they wanted somebody local. I was doing photogging. Mm-hmm. So they wanted somebody local who knew the area to actually do the job.
Yeah.
So that's an instance where that kind of plays
in. That makes sense. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Thanks, Jazz. Appreciate it. Kim, thank you for hanging out.
Thank you.
We'll close things off in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, tomorrow's the day we will be at the county fair. Are you
going to
wear
county
a bonnet?
You know me. Do I look like a bonnet kind of girl?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Yeah. When I see you, I think bonnets.
I am pondering wearing overalls tomorrow.
That would be great.
I know you
went to Junior Sample's garage sale a few days ago.
I do have a mini pearl hat I can wear.
Where's
Kathy,
that?
Kathy Hart is in the studio. I forgot.
Hi.
Is there a White Sox game going on 7:20?
Yeah, Kathy,
there is.
Kathy's playing against the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Good luck.
Oh, I'm good. I'm best in the outfield.
Yeah.
I can't be catcher
you're rangy.
Anymore.
You're very rangy.
It hurts my knees.
Does
I can't
it really.
Yeah. I can't squat like that anymore.
Be careful.
No. I don't know how catchers do it, honestly.
Oh, right?
There's no way you can.
For 3 hours a night.
I know. Yeah. I just don't get it.
Crazy.
So you are sitting in for John Williams. I heard you yesterday. You were with Annabelle Laval.
Yes. Yeah. I felt a little sorry for the people listening because I thought they were going to need some Ritalin after listening to us because we're both a little hyper.
I have ADHD, so I was able to listen to one in one ear and one in the other ear.
Perfect.
And Phil Vitale was on, as
he
is with John Williams typically. And it's funny because Annabelle Laval had never seen him. Because they had to cover his face
before.
Yeah,
for years, he was a secret entity.
She was giddy.
Yeah.
She was. He came in, she goes, oh my God, it's you.
Wow.
And Phil just didn't know how to handle it.
It was entertaining radio.
Good.
What's coming up today?
Let's hope it's entertaining. I'm not sure about that. We are going to be talking to a guy that was in the military 20 years, and now he helps parents, coaches, and athletes. You know how it can be with some of those parents. So he's really good in coaching them and how to be human.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking with him. And then we're also going to be talking again with Dr. Jill. We talked to her yesterday about mold and Lyme, but there was so much that we didn't get to because it's just overwhelming. There's so much information.
Yeah.
People are suffering and they don't even know it. So going to ask a few more of those questions. And then, of course, not to do Lollapalooza to death, but we'll touch on that a little bit.
You have to.
From a different angle. Yeah. I mean, it's the first day.
Right.
It's Chicago.
Yeah. Well, have a good show, Kat.
Thanks.
We'll be listening.